the latest agriculture news from across the state and the nation, here's Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. Here's your host, Danielle Leal.
Good morning and happy Monday. We have a show packed with news to kickstart your work week today. But first, one of the great things about the state that we live in is its diversity of products that are grown here. We're seriously so spoiled with all of the fresh produce and commodities and goodness that comes from the ground. Today, we celebrate one of those goodies, the crunchy sweet treat I like to call pure gold. You guessed it, it's sweet corn. I don't know about your nearby universities, but here in the Central Valley, Fresno State is known for its fast-selling sweet corn, and it started selling it on Friday. This year, I convinced my father-in-law to plant a few rows of the yellowy goodness so we can share it with folks in our hometown. And it's got one more week until it's ready to be picked and shucked. We'll have more about this sweet vegetable later in the show. Also, in today's show, we'll hear from Brian German regarding equal access for wine in British Columbia. And earlier in the week, we heard talk of the Senate's version of the Farm Bill. Taylor Hillman will give us the latest information, and that's where we'll start today's news.
We got our first look at the Senate's version of the Farm Bill last week. Senate Agriculture Chairman Pat Roberts and Ranking Member Debbie Stabenow released the Farm Bill markup on Friday afternoon, and it's expected to be discussed this week on Wednesday. Stabenow commented last August that they've been working on this for some time.
Senator Roberts and I are very focused on coming together and getting a Farm Bill done. We are just about to the end of the hearings on that in September, and then we'll sit down and begin writing a Farm Bill.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said he would like the bill on the floor for vote before the Independence Day recess. The Senate's version, dubbed the Agriculture Improvement Act of 2018, mirrors a lot of what was included in the last Farm Bill with some minor improvements that the American Farm Bureau's Andrew Walmsley points out.
We're seeing some improvements to the ARC program as was expected. Not too many changes to PLC, you know, the opportunity for our farmers to make new elections between the programs. Under Title I, we see, as we're looking into dairy, I think the committee's suggesting some improvements to no longer the MPP program, but the Dairy Risk Coverage Program.
This version does not have major changes to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, which should make it more bipartisan, and the Senate did not limit who could claim payments in the Farm Bill, but did drop the adjusted gross income limit for commodity payments from $900,000 to $700,000. Walmsley said they'd be looking into that change.
There is a lowering of AGI from $900,000 to $700,000. You know, we're understanding that the committee's working in a tight budget environment, so to make some of those improvements to ARC and dairy, there had to be some cuts in there. So that is definitely not an ideal situation. It's something that we hope we can work with the committee.
And the Farm Bill also legalizes the production of industrial hemp. American Farm Bureau Federation President Zippy Duvall issued a release saying, quote, America's farmers and ranchers are facing an economic storm across the countryside, so the release of the Senate Farm Bill is a crucial step to move the very important Farm Bill process forward. The Senate Agriculture Committee has worked hard to address those economic challenges and assemble a bipartisan bill that provides clarity, policy certainty, and vital risk protection tools that our farmers need now more than ever.
That was Taylor Hillman reporting, and now here's Brian German.
Last month, the Trump administration requested the World Trade Organization look into unfair regulations governing the sale of wine in grocery stores in the Canadian province of British Columbia. Vice President of International Marketing for the California Wine Institute, Lindsay Gallagher, explained what the complaint is about.
So all of Canada has provincial liquor control boards. So they basically have monopolies in each of the provinces that control the distribution of alcohol into that province. And British Columbia has recently opened up the sale of wine in grocery stores only to wine that's produced in British Columbia. So it allows wines from some regions to be sold in grocery stores, but not wine from all regions. And the recent complaint that we filed with the WTO was to ask for free and open access to this market for all wine-producing regions. We feel that access should be given equally to all wine producers.
I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
Lawmakers introduced the Bipartisan Accurate Labels Act that is said to be a common-sense measure. The Accurate Labels Act was introduced in the Senate last Thursday. It's a bill that supporters say would provide American consumers nationwide with clear, accurate, and meaningful nutritional information. It was introduced by Republican Senator Jerry Moran of Kansas and in the House of Representatives by Republican Adam Kinzinger of Illinois and Democrat Kurt Schrader of Oregon. Senator Moran said, and quote, "Congress has an important role to play in making certain Americans have the best possible information when making purchasing decisions." His counterpart, Representative Kinzinger, said, and quote, "Consumers deserve full transparency on the products they're buying, no matter where they live or shop. Oftentimes, due to various state laws, items are incorrectly labeled with warnings about harms that do not exist." He added, "This inaccuracy creates confusion and fear for the consumers, desensitizes the public from heeding serious warnings on health risks, and imposes unnecessary and costly regulation burdens for producers. The bill would also prevent the issuance of inaccurate labels that mislead consumers and drive up prices." Supporters say the bill would establish science-based criteria for all additional state and local labeling requirements. It would also allow state-mandated product information to be provided through smartphone-enabled smart labels and ensure that covered product information is risk-based. The American Farm Bureau Federation, along with the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives, were immediately supportive of the legislation. This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. More agriculture news and farm features are coming up.
Hi, I'm Marilyn Kenoshita, Tulare County's Ag Commissioner. You're listening to AgNet West Radio.
Welcome back to AgNet West Farm City News Day. We've got more agriculture news right now.
The University of California is hosting a raspberry tunnel management workshop focused on stormwater and sediment management in plasticulture tunnels. The workshop will be held at the UC Hansen Agricultural Center in Santa Paula on Wednesday, June 13th from 8:30 to noon. Spanish interpretation of the entire program will be available to attendees. The first presentation of the day will be an update on agricultural conditional waivers and nutrient management requirements. There will also be several discussions focused on best management practices, or BMPs, including the establishment of BMPs in post-rows and raspberry plasticulture tunnels. Other discussions will cover the effects of BMPs on nitrogen, phosphorus, weeds, and turbidity of runoff and sediment movement. There will also be a presentation on the costs of the tested BMPs. It's all happening at the Raspberry Tunnel Management Workshop on Wednesday, June 13th at the UC Hansen Agricultural Center in Santa Paula. I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
There could be some major changes coming to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The National Association of Farm Broadcasters reports that the Trump administration is planning to put together a government reorganization report that would include some shifting with the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, which would take it away from the USDA and give it to the Department of Health and Human Services. Several of the proposals in the upcoming report are said to be highly controversial. The SNAP proposal would shrink USDA because the SNAP program is the largest item in the budget. Other proposals included moving the U.S. Forest Service from USDA to the Interior Department. That would also shrink the size of USDA because the Forest Service has the largest number of employees in any USDA division. And another proposal included combining the U.S. Food Safety and Inspection Service, which oversees meat, poultry, processed eggs, and catfish, with the inspection activities of the Food and Drug Administration, with cooperation of a few other agencies. I'm Taylor Hillman for AgNet West Radio Network.
Well, in today's livestock news, the World Meat Congress occurs only once every 2 years, and this year it took place in the U.S. in Dallas, Texas. Marty Smith, who is vice president of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association and a rancher and attorney from Wachuta, Florida, was one of those who was very happy to attend this one-of-a-kind event.
The International Meat Conference is sponsored by the International Meat Secretariat, which is an international group of people throughout the world involved in the meat industry. It's made up of a number of member organizations. At this particular Congress, 48 countries were represented, six continents, and it included cattle and hog producers, as well as packers, feeders, and then a lot of people from the retail side, both restaurant and grocery stores. In other words, buyers from all over the world. This was the first time that it's been in the United States in about 25 years. So yes, NCBA does take part in it. Because of it being in the United States, being held in Texas, we took a more active role in sponsoring some of the events. This year, it was hosted by the U.S. Meat Export Federation, and we play an active part with USMEF. And because they were hosting it, we helped with some of the events.
Again, that was NCBA Vice President Marty Smith. The Congress this year was held in Dallas, Texas, back on May 30th through June 1st. And the Board of Directors of the National Milk Producers Federation voted last week to extend funding through 2021 for their Cooperatives Working Together, or CWT, program, the farmer-funded export assistance program that assists member cooperatives in exporting dairy products. CWT's three-year extension comes at a time of growing U.S. milk production, weak global dairy prices, and increased worldwide competition. They say CWT is the only program of its kind that enables farmers to fund a private enterprise that increases the competitiveness of U.S. dairy exports. NMPF developed and manages the 16-year-old self-help program. NMPF Chairman Randy Mooney said CWT is a unique and highly cost-effective tool for America's dairy farmers, and the ongoing commitment of America's dairy cooperatives to the program sends a signal to dairy producers at home and dairy exporters abroad that the U.S. will maintain a strong competitive stance in the global dairy market. CWT is a voluntary membership program funded by contributions from NMPF's member cooperatives and more than 100 individual farmers. The funds raised from the CWT membership fee helps maintain U.S. exports in an increasingly competitive world market. If you'd like more information about the CWT program, which again has been extended for three more years, just visit CWT.coop. I'm Randall Wiseman for AgNet West. AgriView with Everett Greiner is next.
I don't know how many research organizations there are in America, but there's one to study any subject that concerns people. Example, wasted food. Now, this group found out that we waste 150,000 tons of food every day. That's roughly 1 pound for every person. That even sounds like a lot, but put it another way, that's equal to the use of 30 million acres of land every year. That's about 7% of total cropland in America. But now, if you want scary figures, it takes about 4 trillion gallons of water to irrigate that amount of land. Fruits and vegetables were wasted most. Then came dairy products, followed by meat. Meat waste totaled about 17%. Now, if you put the amount that you eat on your plate, the food waste would almost vanish. Think about that. And that's AgriView for today. Everett Greiner, Southeast AgNet.
This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. More agriculture news and farm features are coming up. Welcome back to AgNet West Farm City News Day. We've got more agriculture news right now.
Mackenzie Hinson celebrated her 14th birthday in May, and this Mount Olive, North Carolina teen will have plenty to keep her busy this summer.
We fundraise every single thing that goes into that food pantry. We have the third annual Father's Day Grill Off. We have the Summer Cafe that we will operate. Last year, we fed about 10,000 children, and it's now gone up to over 300 kids every Friday this summer. We're going to provide free health checks, like we're going to do dental, we're going to do blood pressure checks, heart rate checks.
Oh, and was it mentioned this homeschool student runs her own nonprofit food pantry at Mount Olive and surrounding communities where Dry Pockets are located?
A Dry Pocket is where there is not a seepage within a 30 to 45 mile radius.
Mackenzie says it was through her 4-H experience that she gained the inspiration and skills to start up and operate the Make a Difference MAD food pantry at age 10.
The first speech that I did was on childhood hunger in North Carolina. And when you research all the statistics and you realize this is a problem right here in your backyard, it's like a ton of bricks hit you. When I research the statistics, I'm like, okay, I want to help with this issue.
And Mackenzie's main philosophy regarding the food pantry is giving clients a sense of pride.
I want to change the way people look at food pantries. I want to educate them and tell them it's not just about food. It's how you make people feel when they walk in the door.
To many in her home region of Central North Carolina, the food pantry is a lifesaver, literally, as Mackenzie and pantry volunteers were on the front lines providing food and relief when Hurricane Matthew hit the Tar Heel State 2 years ago and closed off roads and transportation.
We were open for 43 straight days during Hurricane Matthew. We fed over 7,000 hot meals, and we delivered them to trailer parks that were flooded into my senior hall pantry.
The experience gained by the Make a Difference crew led to further assistance during natural disasters. In 2017 alone, a Make a Difference food trailer provided meals in areas of Texas hit by Hurricane Harvey and eastern Tennessee impacted by wildfires. So how is the MAD food pantry able to sustain itself? Mackenzie says primarily through fundraisers she is involved in organizing. In addition to the Father's Day cook-off you heard about earlier, there is an annual golf tournament, which, yes, Mackenzie says,
not even play in that golf tournament. I can get it in the screen in 2.5.
Mackenzie Hinson is indeed thankful for the publicity and support the Make a Difference Food Pantry has received, yet she humbly, passionately points out,
we strive to feed people. That is our mission. We strive to educate. We strive to promote volunteerism.
And adds none of this would have been possible without her involvement in and experience through 4-H. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Celebrating a fresh and sweet summertime treat. That's coming up on This Land of Ours. Monday, June 11th, is National Corn on the Cob Day. Since it's now picnic season, there's no better time than to source this summer delicatessen from all corners of the U.S. Corn on the Cob is also known in different regions as pole corn, corn stick, sweet pole, butter pop, or long maize. It is a sweet corn that is picked when the kernels are still tender when it's in its milk stage. Corn is one of the most widely consumed cereal grains. It is a rich source of many vitamins and minerals. Boiling, steaming, roasting, or grilling are the most common ways of preparing corn on the cob. If it is grilled or oven roasted, the corn is usually left in its husk during the cooking process. Proper dinner etiquette for eating corn says it's appropriate to hold the cob at each end with your fingers. I'm Kathy Eisen for AgNet West.
Good day, everybody. Albert J. Hernandez, the Untamed Chef for AgNet West, and welcome to the California Kitchen, where you can learn how to cook in under 3 minutes or less. I'm your host with the most. Let's get started. So we're still working on the grill. We're trying to get those barbecues out, trying to get your smokers out, your Traegers, your Green Mountains, whatever is your culinary claim to fame, your poison that you love to do when you're working outside and you're cooking up a meal. This is all for you. This is my recipe for a smoked salmon. And the trick to great smoked salmon, first and foremost, is making sure that this absolutely just falls apart. Now, I don't do it with any cedar. I don't do it with any different kind of wood. I put it directly into my Green Mountain smoker. Slow and low is the name of the game here. So it is a little bit of a labor of love, but I promise you, if you're willing to put the work in, the result is out of this world. So the first thing we're going to do is I'm going to take a Ziploc bag and I'm going to add 1 pound of my salmon to that, 4 tablespoons of lemon juice, 1 sprig of rosemary, 1 sprig of thyme, and I'm gonna let this sit overnight or for at least 8 to 12 hours for the flavor to really get embedded into this piece of fish that we're gonna be cooking up here. Now everybody says, well, chef, shouldn't we even put the salt and shouldn't we put the seasonings on? Absolutely not, because what's gonna happen is as it sits in the bag, that salt and that seasoning is just gonna start to, it's gonna fall off, and the flavor that we're looking for comes from the salt and seasoning after this salmon has rested and done what it's supposed to do. I'm gonna set my Green Mountain grill to approximately, we just wanna get it to smoke. So I'm gonna try to go between 179 and 212. Anywhere in that area is the proper smoke that I'm looking for here. You could do cold smoke as well, but I highly recommend doing this in a slow and low smoker. I'm gonna top it with my Cajun spice and salt and pepper, always to taste, because everybody has a absolute different preference on that. And I'm gonna let this thing sit for at least 8 hours. And I know it sounds like a lot. So if you wanna make more than enough salmon for, you know, you wanna make some for the neighbors, or you really got some special things you wanna do with this, you can definitely do that. You can add more to the recipe. Remember to also increase the ratio of what's going on. Other than the salt and pepper and the Cajun spice, everything else going back in, the lemon juice and the thyme, it needs to be there because it's a smoked salmon and the flavor is not supposed to be hidden, but it's supposed to be so richly developed that it's going to make you absolutely explode with creativity and culinary flavor. I'm Albert J. Hernandez. You can call me the Untamed Chef for AgNet West.
This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. We'll have more of the day's agriculture news in just a moment. And remember, you can always get the latest agriculture news from across the state and the nation at our website at www.agnetwest.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back to AgNet West Farm City News Day. I'm Danielle Leo. In today's interview segment, I talked with Hannah Thompson-Weeman, Communication Director for the Animal Agriculture Alliance Group. She expressed to me the group's recent concerns with the uptick in recent extreme behavior from activist groups coming onto family farms across America.
Hannah Thompson-Weeman, Vice President of Communications with the Animal Agriculture Alliance.
Hey, Hannah, thanks for joining us today. I know we've spoken before, but for some of those folks who maybe don't know what the Animal Agriculture Alliance is, can you briefly explain that to them?
The Animal Agriculture Alliance is a nonprofit organization, and our mission is to bridge the communication gap between farm and fork. So everything that we do is with the goal of communicating accurate, science-based information about animal agriculture. A lot of times that's mainstream, large-scale, modern animal agriculture to key audiences, consumers, influencers, and other people who get exposed to a lot of myth and misinformation about our industry. A lot of that comes from animal rights activist groups, so we do a lot of monitoring of those groups and telling the industry about what they're doing so we can all be prepared.
Now, it's my understanding that one of the Alliance's jobs is to make sure that there is that transparency between the grower and the producer. But, you know, sometimes you have to fight a battle against folks who the industry doesn't normally see eye to eye with. And recently, you guys have had extra concern about how far these animal activist groups are actually going.
There are a few animal rights groups who have been increasingly extreme over the past few years, and it is a huge concern for us at the Alliance. These groups have been engaging in protests and disruptions at events and things like that, but now we're seeing them do more and more on farms, which is obviously a huge concern for several different reasons. Biosecurity is one of them. These people will come onto farms, they'll go into barns without permission. They're not really authorized to be there. We've even seen instances where they steal animals and take them from that farm. One big example, and the one that we're really concerned about, is something that happened in California. There was a big conference called the Animal Liberation Conference, which brought together activists from across the country who obviously believe in animal liberation. So they believe animals should be treated the same as humans, and they don't think that farming or that eating animal products is an acceptable thing to do. So this group, they actually brought 500 activists out to a farm where they held a protest. They went into barns, again, without permission. They stole animals, ended up leading to 37 birds they took, and then about 35 activists were arrested. So obviously the sheer scale of that event with 500 activists showing up at a farm is something that we find very alarming, and it's an unfortunate reality that these kind of incidents are something that we in the animal agriculture industry have to be aware of and potentially respond to handle on our own operation.
And, you know, while they may think that they are helping the animals and in whatever situation that they may be in, they're actually causing a more dangerous situation for, you know, the animals and the consumers and the farmers. And typically the farmers have to deal with that consequence. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
These kinds of incidences can be devastating, not only for the producers who most of the time they live on that property, their families there on that property. So you're dealing with hundreds of people showing up and potentially threatening the safety and security of your home and of your family. So that can be very frightening for someone to have to face that. And not only does it have consequences for the farmers, ironically, it has negative impacts on the animals that these groups are claiming that they're trying to help and trying to protect. So as we know, in animal agriculture, biosecurity is huge. There is a reason why we're very careful about who goes into barns and what they do before they go in, as far as showers and foot baths and wearing the appropriate clothing and have you been on the farm in the past 24 hours and all those kind of things. It's very important, especially on poultry operations, that we make sure we are not introducing diseases or other threats into the barn. It can also be very stressful for those animals to have dozens of people burst in and cause a big scene, and then removing them from that secure and very controlled environment can again lead to them becoming ill, becoming sick, and eventually they might even die because they've been removed from that secure environment where any disease threats were managed, they were kept out. There's a reason why most modern operations on large-scale farms have moved to indoor housing, and that's because it allows us to manage the health and safety of those animals and try to prevent disease and health threats from impacting them. So these groups that claim to be working in the name of animal welfare and animal health and safety, their actions really fly in the face of that.
Well, how can people in the ag industry, or maybe someone who has experienced something like this firsthand, be proactive about it and try to mitigate future situations from happening? How can people either break that barrier or protect themselves?
If you are a producer in animal agriculture, if you have livestock and poultry on your property, on your farm, you really need to be taking some steps to think through how to handle a situation like this. One of our biggest pieces of advice is to take the time now and reach out to local law enforcement. Tell them about what happened in California. Tell them that that could possibly happen right there in your community and make sure they know that something of that scale could happen. Make sure they give you advice for what you can do, how to call them, how to get them out to help out. And those kind of measures that you should be taking according to local law enforcement. There are also some farm security measures that you can take on your operation. If fences are possible, gates onto roads, motion sensor lighting, your own cameras and recording devices, locked doors, locked gates, any of those things can help make you less of an easy target. Just like burglars, these groups are looking for the path of least resistance. So you need to make yourself not an easy target and take any steps that you can to ensure the security and safety of your property. You also need to be reviewing procedures with anyone who's on your farm. So family members, employees, vendors, neighbors. Make sure they know what to do if unauthorized visitors show up. Ask questions, demand identification, figure out if people have a reason to be there or if they don't. We need to be vigilant and we need to feel empowered to make sure that we are only letting people onto our farms that are there for the right reasons and not there for ulterior motives.
Hannah said for more information on the animal agriculture industry, ways to keep that conversation about agriculture going, or even just to prepare yourselves if you happen to be put in a situation with an animal activist, visit their website at animalagriculturealliance.org. This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. More agriculture news and farm features are coming up. Welcome back to AgNet West Farm City News Day. We've got more agriculture news right now.
Larger growers using H-2A workers to fill their labor needs helps other producers in their area. We asked Manzanita Farms' Dave Peck about how his labor situation was back in early May, and he said it wasn't too bad at the time, but now in June it would be tough.
I think everybody's probably pretty good right now. One factor that people need to realize is that there's been a slight reduction in total acres in California, particularly in Oxnard, which is where a lot of the labor for Santa Maria will migrate from when they get slow in Oxnard. They're down in acres, so there weren't quite as many people drawn down there. Right now, we're not seeing any labor shortages, although we always expect that late May, June. There's other employment opportunities for the workers. The fruit in the strawberry fields gets smaller. It's a little slower. They start earning a little less per hour. There's other places where they can go. We'll see what happens come late May, early June.
Peck said the money doesn't work out for them to use H-2A workers, but he does appreciate the operations who do use them.
Our acreage and the size of business that we have is not really conducive financially to cover the added costs of an H-2A program, but we are certainly thankful that there are growers in town who are taking advantage of that because it does help the overall labor pool, so we're benefiting from it, even though it's not a good financial fit for our company right now.
I'm Taylor Hillman for AgNet West Radio Network.
In the ag industry, marketing to millennials requires breaking away from traditional marketing. Michael Clements from the National Association of Farm Broadcasters has the story.
At the 22nd World Meat Congress in Dallas, Texas, hosted by the U.S. Meat Export Federation and the International Meat Secretariat, author Jeff Frum told the international attendees it's time to rethink marketing their products to consumers. Frum told the audience that experiences matter as today's consumers express themselves through food.
How many of you used to have fashion as the thing that drove you as a young person to sort of express yourself? Today's modern consumer expresses themselves through food. The discretionary purchases on food have increased at a dramatic rate at the time when the discretionary purchases on fashion haven't. So they're trading category fashion for category food as a way to express themselves. And the opportunity to drive margin is through unique, flavorful food.
From, the author of marketing books specific to generations, including Millennials and Generation Z, says it's important to use data to find ways to innovate and find new ways to reach modern consumers.
Now, I'm going to make an argument that in your category, the rate of innovation is remarkably slower than almost any other category. If we looked at technology change in the last 20 years, we'd see almost unbelievable change. If we saw changes in fashion, we'd see huge amounts of change. I think I'm the only one still wearing a traditional watch. How many of you have a watch on that has tells time based on Apple or some other product, right? So as we look at change in category after category, I think we're seeing a rate of change that's faster than in your category, which leads me to a hypothesis that there's significant opportunity for you to take business by changing faster than you're changing today.
Frum uses yogurt, a sector that didn't change for decades, as an example.
If we look at Chobani, what we could find is, at breakfast, the product you would buy will be different than the product you would get between lunch and dinner. And the reality is, the difference probably is in how much sugar is in a sidecar that was designed for an in-between afternoon snack that you could pick up at a grocery store versus what is available for breakfast. So the same company understands that they need a product, even though the product, from their view, is the same. To the consumer, it's not the same. So to the consumer, my need state at breakfast looks different than my need state between lunch and dinner. And if I want to grab more and more of this consumer's demand to pay for protein, I have to design a different product. And they've done it with remarkable success as the smallest player in the category.
For farmers and ranchers, he says they should share detailed information with people who want to learn more about their food. Frum says, from brands to the farm, consumers want to know the story behind the products they are buying.
The consumer is a prosumer, which means they're going to co-create their story, and it's about brand me. And the reality is that consumer has a lot of expectations. They have an expectation to have a seat at the table. And if you've heard in the past people tell you it's about being transparent, I'm here to tell you our research suggests that's going to get you a C on your report card. In Tomorrowland, you're going to have to offer proof that the story you're living is real, which is a step beyond transparency.
Learn more online at www.usmef.org. Michael Clements reporting.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit Agnet West online at agnetwest.com. You can follow Agnet West on Twitter and Facebook with @AgnetWest. Follow Brian German with @BrianAgnetWest, Danielle Leal with @DLealAgnetWest, and Taylor Hillman with @TheManOfTheHill. This has been Farm City News Day by Agnet West.